This is Bruce Bostic and Kurt Bateman. Kurt is president of the Franklin County CAP Council here for the UAW, and we're here on WCRS with two really great candidates, Maureen Reedy and Donna O'Connor, who are also union members of the teachers union, running for state representative here.
Maureen and Donna, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
So, yeah, we're really excited to have a chance to talk with you here. First of all, we understand both of you are actual teachers. You're not just people that work with the union, but you're actual teachers. And what was it that inspired, you know, Donna, Maureen, what inspired you to get throw your hat in the ring and get out there and run for office this time?
Well, you know, Bruce, we're all in this together. We experienced an era last year where we were really under the threat of having our voices taken away in terms of advocating for our kids and what we needed to best teach and what they needed to best learn. And when Senate Bill 5 came down the pike, and we were caught by surprise and thought, how could this be? You know, we need to have our voice in the equation, speaking up for what we need in our classrooms, what our kids with special needs need, what we need in increased technology to teach 21st century skills. And, you know, to have our professional voices taken away in the collective bargaining process, you know, we've been union members for I've been a union member for 29 years, and it's always worked. We've met at the table with administration, and we've brought forth our concerns, and we've compromised, and, you know, we've come out with what's best for kids and what's best for teaching and what's best for learning. So that really started my period of being active here, and, you know, I decided it'd be good to have a teacher's voice inside the State House instead of having laws made for us from people who did not work in the classroom. I thought, why not get our teachers' expertise and voice in the State House to work for laws that support our kids, education, public education, and so that's really what prompted me to jump in.
And Maureen, which House district are you throwing your hat in the ring for?
I am running for the 24th District in the Ohio House of Representatives, which is all of Upper Arlington, most of Hilliard, with Brown and Norwich Townships, and parts of Clintonville, actually, the northern part of Clintonville to Worthington, and then Pleasant and Prairie Townships as well.
And I know Donna's there with you. Donna, you want to chime in? I know from having seen you speak before that you weren't really thinking about this until someone said, hey, how about you?
Yeah.
Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, that's true. I've been a special education teacher for 19 years in the state of Ohio, and I certainly can tell you that I never dreamed I would leave the job and the kids that I love to run for office. For me, this journey, you know, started, you know, with Maureen within the last 10 years as far as connecting the dots and knowing that I couldn't shut my classroom door and hope that politicians would leave me alone. And then last year with the redistricting and the results of the newly drawn House and Senate and congressional districts here in Ohio. And where I live in Dublin, my current representative got redrawn out of Dublin. And so that left an opportunity. And it was kind of one of those questions was, you know, if not me, then who? And if not now, then when? And for me, as an educator, we need teachers and we need educators inside the State House to protect public education, and someone that you know is going to work for a school funding formula that works for all of us across the state.
And again, as I asked Maureen before, your district is which number? 21st?
Yes, my district is the 21st House district. It encompasses the area of Worthington, Dublin to the Franklin County line, and then a little bit of some portions of Northwest Columbus, including some parts of Hilliard and some parts of Columbus City Schools.
Great.
I think Bruce has got some questions he's prepared. Watch out. Here he comes.
No, I don't prepare anything. But, I really wanted you to know that, you know, at least from my point of view, you really are an inspiration. My father was a teacher and a coach, ended up being assistant superintendent over at Southwestern and before he retired. And my mother was 40 years a librarian, and she still is. She was so happy when I told her that I had a sign for her to put in her yard that was a union school teacher who's running for state rep. So,
well, tell your mom that we are honored for someone who devoted 40 years of her with, I'm sure, passion and dedication and her intellect, and also raising a family, because your kids in school become like your family too. And that's heroic, to spend 40 years as a librarian teaching children to read and love and enjoy books. That sets them up for life.
Well,
so
you,
she's our hero.
Well, you and I certainly agree, but that isn't a unanimous point of view. There are, you know, right-wing groups out there that have just been able to capture center stage, vilifying teachers, vilifying the idea, what you mentioned, collective bargaining, but especially teachers. I mean, when we were growing up, teachers, firefighters, cops, you know, were good people and we looked up to them, but especially teachers. Could you deal a little bit with this whole idea that, you know, teachers are now being, having a bullseye put on your chest and what that's meant for you guys, you folks?
Well, you know, for us as teachers, when you ask parents and community members if they like their child's teacher, the majority of them say yes. And so as teachers, we are dealing with a bigger issue and an issue of basically asking some of our elected officials, how does what you are doing help build our communities by attacking teachers and policemen and firefighters and those people that provide the core public services that we depend on in our community? How do we create an environment for good-paying jobs in our state and in our communities if we continue to attack those people? And so for Maureen and I, that's part of the reason why we're doing this, so that we do have a voice in the state house to defend workers across the state.
Well, just a little follow up, you know, that they teachers unions have especially been vilified. And I think one of the things that isn't getting into the public domain much is that, you know, there's this idea put forward at all these vicious teachers unions are going out and all they negotiate on is just raising wages and protecting bad teachers. But the truth is that there's a lot of negotiations that are about a good percentage of those negotiations are about what's good for the community, what's good for the students and how to get decent education out the end of this thing, aren't they?
Well, you know, I think when you speak of unions, Bruce, you know, let's look at the last year and a half. We all went separately down to the state house. You know, you came, we came as, of course, educators, but you know, auto workers, steel workers, iron workers, carpenters, police, fire, nurses. You know, we educate our kids in Ohio, and you work and dedicate your lives and careers to building our roads and building the steel frameworks that are the foundations for our hospitals and our school buildings and our homes. We all contribute to our society together. And what happened is we all became one voice. We went separately, but we left together on November 8th, and we left with our stories told to the people of Ohio, and 62%, a vast majority of Ohioans supported us, supported our voices speaking up for what we needed to do our jobs and take care of our kids, educate our kids, protect our citizens. So really, I think you can look at that and say the people of Ohio are with us. And more importantly, we're all together, and we're keeping our message strong that unions speak up for the workers' voice, and workers' rights are human rights, for a fair wage, for an honest day's work. And, you know, that's what keeps our middle class strong, keeps our economy strong. And, you know, So that's really our message right now, is carrying that on.
Yeah, that's exactly the story that we heard last week on the program. I interviewed auto workers from up in the northeastern corner of the state, and what it was like, the comparison between what it was like 4 years ago for their jobs and their futures and how it is now. And quite frankly, it's been quite a turnaround. Tell me, what does it mean, you know, to your schools and your school budgets to see the economy doing so much better?
Well, you know, I just want to make note, too, that my brother is a UAW member up in Northeast Ohio.
And you're here.
Right. 4 years ago, he didn't know if he was going to have a job. And now he does have, a strong future with his company. And so I think workers across the state responded to the fragile economy by making concessions and benefit concessions during, the economic downturn. And so now with the economy coming back, again, continuing to attack the middle class and the workers and the teachers across the state, it's not going to help create job growth. It's not going to boost the economy by continuing to do that.
Right. And we've seen for about three decades now this whole idea that, if we simply cut taxes, somehow that will spur the economy, when in fact we need people sort of in the community who are earning living wages who can create demand in the economy and make it grow. I think that's where we need to be. And I hope that you agree with that sentiment. Is that how you see it?
Absolutely. You know, we are spending our days and our dedication, our careers, educating children so they can build a secure and successful future. So they have the tools they need to go out and find something, some profession that they're passionate about, that they enjoy, and that earns them a decent income so they can go out and, buy the things they need, buy a house, raise a few kids, buy a couple cars, and keep the economy going. So we're all in this together. And I think that's the benefit of the SB 5 and then crushing and repealing that, is we became stronger and we grew in numbers, mm-hmm. All of us who make up the middle class and work hard every day.
And we heard that message this morning. I got a chance to hear President Berga, the AFL-CIO, talk on that very issue and the fact that we have unity in the whole community. And
I like that.
Yeah.
And it rhymes, too.
Going back to your question about school budgets and school budget cuts from the state, Maureen and I both say this to people at the doors. We knock doors every single day to talk to voters in our district and basically saying that solving one financial problem at the state level in turn created many others for our local schools and our local communities. You have almost 200 school districts in this state in November that have levy requests on the ballot. Yeah. Almost 200. Mm-hmm. And This budget that we're dealing with directly impacted our families and our children and our communities.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Bruce?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Could you kind of generally, I know you have a number of key issues in your districts. Could you, each maybe go through what you see are the key specific issues for your district and how you think they need to be handled?
Well, I think the number one issue that I hear is people are feeling a double squeeze. They're feeling a squeeze in terms of reduced wages and perhaps concessions they've made as workers, mm-hmm. in terms yep. of increased contributions to pensions or health
care, yeah.
their health plan, their and health care. Yes, but the other thing is they're looking at rising property taxes from school levies that are being put on the ballot because our state cut $2.8 billion right. across the board in this budget to education. And what they did on top of that is cut local government funds by 50%.
Yeah.
So how much was that again?
50% of local government funds.
Half of government funds.
That's like your income. If you're married, you come home and the husband or the wife loses their job, and overnight they have to absorb, a 50% loss.
Vilify and put the blame on the people that are the victims.
Yeah, what really they did is they shifted the cost of balancing the state's budget onto just the everyday person. You know, the teacher, policeman, the fireman, the auto worker. You know, all of us who the nurses, and we all have house payments to make. We all have I have two children in college.
Yep.
So we're feeling that squeeze. We're trying to finance college education. My children, of course, have some loans. So even look at young adults coming out of college. They're faced with high loans, a very tough job market, and property taxes that are sky high. So it really would be unreachable for them to even buy a home in the neighborhoods they grew up in.
Many of the doors that I knock on, Kurt and Bruce, number one comment and concern is the squeeze that they are feeling as local property owners,
right,
and what is going on at the state level and their responsibility to public education. They are feeling the pressure to pass school levies and not quite understanding the way schools are funded in the state of Ohio. And when you tell the average voter at the door that right now Ohio is the only state in the country that does not have a school funding formula on the books, they almost don't believe you.
Unless we forget that the Supreme Court decided four separate cases saying that the legislature needed to not rely on local property taxes as much and needed to constitutionally fund the schools at the state level.
Right.
And this legislature, dominated by the party in power right now, has not addressed that issue for better than a decade.
The power that's...
There was, and Bruce and Kurt, there was a plan that was carefully drafted and passed, House Bill 1 in 2009, the Educational Opportunities Act, that addressed and won awards. It was a bipartisan commission and drawn bipartisanly and won national awards for its retooling school funding on the state level. And the plan was tabled and scrapped.
In the Senate, right?
By the administration.
By the administration, it's the majority right now.
When the administration switched.
Yes, right.
So we currently have no school funding formula on the books. School districts are getting the same amount that they got 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I've noticed and I wanted to ask you about is that, the election process now just seems to be such just one soundbite after another. And regular folks, teachers, firefighters, others, but especially teachers, are vilified. And I think, could you speak to kind of what your experience means? You know, we don't see you running necessarily as a specific representative of one political party or another, more as somebody that has real experience with real families, balancing real budgets in real communities. What does that mean when we're talking to regular folks out there? Does that give you kind of a foot up, maybe?
I just to go back, just to comment too on your union piece as far as teachers and the teachers unions getting vilified. Let's look across the country and let's look at the highest performing schools by state and where are those schools? Where are those public education systems? Those are in states where there are strong unions. Yeah. Ohio, Massachusetts, New Jersey, just to name a few.
Uh-huh.
And so you have to pivot and remind folks of that. And like you just said, vilifying teachers unions and things. We fight for lower class sizes. We fight for funding for our students. We fight for a sound educational environment for our students.
And that's something I think translates to whether somebody works for the for the school board or works for a local plant or you know, some other area. If you work either with your mind or your hands, I think folks can identify with that.
We're all part of the same community. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
You're teaching our kids. We're building your cars. You know.
Right. And we really need to look at the big picture across the state, and we really have to look at the, like you said, the demonizing of the teaching profession, and by having this message of tarnishing our public schools. It sets the public up to accept anything. And this could be a completely other radio, you know, interview conversation that we could have.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we're setting ourselves up to the privatization and public monies being funneled into the privatization of public.
And when that happens, I think many times I will remind, you know, maybe other folks or young people that public means all of us can walk into that park. All of us can take part of this. Private means if you ain't got the dough, you ain't going in there.
Right. But, you know, basically public education is the foundation of our democracy. Yeah. When our founding fathers wrote, you know, the Revolutionary War was about coming to this country and having voice and choice and equal representation, and one of the Northwest Ordinance in 1785 laid out in townships in Ohio the responsibility to set aside funds for public education. And this is exactly what you're saying, Bruce and Kurt. Every child is welcome that walks through our doors, whether no matter their zip code, no matter their abilities, no matter their background, no matter their culture, their race, their religious preference. And, you know, this is about community. And today, Donna and I were at a conference called Preserving Public Education Summit. And we were here with parents, with school board members, with superintendents and treasurers of districts, and, of course, educators. And we are here to galvanize and really pull together and stand up for public education, the cornerstone of our democracy, and preserving our dedication to, you know, free and equal opportunity for quality education for every child.
You're
That's
absolutely
what
right.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We have to maintain that, or as you say, we will damage our democracy in some irreparable ways. I couldn't agree more. Bruce?
I'm sorry, Donna.
Go ahead. As people head into the last 3 weeks before the election, 21 days from today, I think voters need to ask themselves when they look at some of these issues, not just, you know, school funding, but when they look at all of the issues in their communities and the economy in their local communities, they need to look at their current elected officials and they need to ask themselves, who is that person with? Are they with me and the kids and the other parents in this community? And how does what they are doing and what they are voting for help our communities? Mm-hmm. I think voters really need to look at that and ask themselves that.
Well, that's specifically why we wanted to interview Donna O'Connor and Marina Reedy, because you guys are with the folks.
Yeah.
I wanted to jump in real quickly and just slightly change the topic just for a second. Something that's near and dear to many of the industrial workers where we came from was this question of mass transit. And it just has amazed me that we had an opportunity to get high-speed rail here, which we know specifically would have created over 3,000 good, solid industrial jobs, many of them union jobs, in communities that are depressed now, and would have put us on the map getting high-speed rail that could have expanded. And they turned it down. I mean, I'll throw you the question and ask you what your feeling is about that, but it just kind of amazed me. Could you speak to that question just for a second?
Well, I think it's a classic example of not having long-term vision. And, you know, we have, going in there as educators, we need to look long-term for what's going to benefit our citizens, our economy, our society. And really looking at new industry and innovation in terms of its long-term benefits. It, providing jobs is important, too, but connecting different parts of the state and high-speed rail to get goods and services back and forth and to get, you know, to connect people from different communities that might not normally be connected. Also, look at the environmental implications.
Oh, absolutely.
In terms of, you know, reducing emissions and a cleaner cleaner air and the integrity of our environment and looking towards that green movement.
Right. Not to mention the secondary jobs that would have been created.
Right. And Maureen, I'm sorry to cut you off here, but we're coming pretty close to the top of the 30 minutes. In 30 seconds or less, give us your best spiel on why people should vote for you. And then right after you, Donna, you do the same for your respective seats. Go ahead. 30 seconds.
Well, great. You know what? I am running to be your state representative because I'm worried. I'm worried that educational and economic opportunities are slipping away. And I'm worried that public education is on the verge of disappearing in this state. And that means our democracy is at risk. I am a person who is dedicated to our kids and our communities, and I'd like to look at job creation and growth, which involves educational opportunity and equal representation for all hardworking
Ohio. Okay, Donna, go.
All right. You know, many elected leaders talk about change, and they don't change the world. And when elected, I'm not going to change the world or change the state of Ohio. But I will commit to long-term investments in creating good, long-term, good-paying jobs for Ohioans, and that includes innovation and investing in education for our kids. If we lose out on the opportunities to educate our next generation of innovators, we will lose out on the competitive advantage that we have in this economy and this a global economy.
Thank you very much, Donna. I hate to cut you short, but we've got to wrap the show. It's at about 30 minutes. I want to thank both Donna O'Connor and Maureen Reedy for being here today with us. For Bruce Bostic, I'm Kurt Bateman. Labor creates all wealth. Good day, folks.